We are proceeding through a series of shiurim, where each shiur really stands on its own, but at the same time we're going to see that there is a connection between all of them. Now, I don't know how many of you ever saw, there's a movie called The Truman Show. Any of you see it? Yeah. Can you tell everybody what's the idea behind it? Do you remember? But he is living his life, but everybody else are actors. And he doesn't, obviously at the end of the thing, he realizes that he is... It's a movie. It's a movie. Well, and it raises, but it raises all kinds of questions. But an issue, I think, actually is something that we are familiar with in our own life. This idea that we are all choosing our lives, but as we know the Yiddish expression, you know, man plans and God laughs. So we too, at a certain extent, God has his plans and we are busy with our own, but at the same time, sometimes in the world, there are multi-layers of happenings going on. And I want to show that to you very clearly in source number 18. If you turn to source number 18, the Bereishit Rabbah tells us, Vayihi be'et hahi, and it was at that time, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmon patach, ki anochi yadati et machshavot. God says, I know what man is thinking. Shvatim hayu asukim b'mechirato shel Yosef. The brothers were busy selling Yosef. Yosef haya asuk b'sako u'b'ta'anito. Yosef was busy with his mourning. Reuven haya asuk b'sako b'tanito too. Reuven too was busy doing tshuva because of the story with Bilah. Yaakov haya asuk b'sako b'tanito. Yaakov is busy mourning. Yehuda haya osek b'likach lo isha. But Yehuda is busy getting married. Hakadosh Baruch Hu haya osek b'oro oro shel melech HaMashiach. You see, all the humans are busy doing, each one's doing what they think is important at that point in time, but God is busy doing something else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu haya osek b'oro oro shel melech HaMashiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is busy planning the birth of the Mashiach. And so what we're actually going to see in our chapter here is the connection between these parallel worlds that overlap. And I think that becomes our challenge sometimes, is to see beyond our own limited perceptions and see that perhaps there is something larger going on here. So I imagine that this is a chapter that you are all familiar with, but I hope that we will be able to analyze it on a different level at this point in time. So we're holding back to source number one, which is the chapter in Bereishit 38. Now, what happens at Bereishit 37? Our Midrash just told us. That's Mechira of Yosef. Okay? The story of Mechirat Yosef is broken up with the story of Yehuda. And then what's chapter 39? It goes back to Yosef, specifically which story? Eshet Potiphar. Okay, so you have the selling of Yosef, then we have the story of Yehuda, and then we have that. Now, Vayehi be'et ahi, vayered Yehuda me'et achav, vayet el ish adulami ushmo chira. So it was at that time, Yehuda is vayered. How would you translate vayered? Here it's translated as he is demoted by his brothers. But what would you say is really the pshat here? Right, so they were living in Hebron. Hebron is the mountain range. He's leaving Hebron, so geographically he is going down. But as you see from the English translation here, and I think that's something we can all associate with, the going down is not only a physical, geographical going down here, but it is also a spiritual one. And so why, Me'et Achiv, why is he leaving? Is he escaping? Is he running away? Are the brothers chasing him out? Okay, why would he be the one to have to leave from his brothers? The brothers had expectations of Yehuda. And remember, Yehuda was the one who said, don't kill him. Don't kill him, sell him. And had Yehuda said, don't kill him, don't sell him, let him go home, they would have listened as well. And when the brothers see the pain and the anguish that they have caused Yaakov, they are blaming Yehuda for allowing it to happen. And as a result of that, Yehuda leaves. And they say it's not clear to us whether he's leaving voluntarily, whether he's running away, whether he's escaping, whether his brothers are chasing him out. Whatever it is, and he goes and he finds a new friend. He interacts with this new friend in a number of ways. Vayarsham Yehuda bat ish Kanani ushmo Shua vayikacheha vayavo eleha. And the next thing that happens is Yehuda now marries a wife who is the daughter of Shua, so we will refer to her as Bat Shua. Now the Pasuk in Pasuk Bet identifies this woman as a, in Hebrew, look at the Hebrew word, defines her as a Canaanite. What is the problem with saying that Yehuda has married a Canaanite? You know that one of the things, when Avraham is sending out Eliezer to get a wife, the one thing, he tells him, I don't care who you bring me home, but under no circumstances should you bring me a Canaanite. And then when Yaakov has to run away, Rivka says to Yitzchak, he has to leave here in order to find a wife. I cannot tolerate the thought that he would marry a Canaanite. So now here we have in Pasuk Bet, we have Yehuda marrying a Canaanite. So how do we understand Yehuda's behavior? Okay, so it could be different. Right, so it could be exactly as you're saying, that once he leaves his family, once he feels rejected by his family, the next step is rejection the family tradition, and therefore he takes a Canaanite wife. That's possibility number one. Possibility number two is, and if you noticed, if you looked in the English translation here, and I've said this to you a number of times, every translation is automatically an explanation. Here their translation of Kanani is a merchant, which you have in source number two. Rashi brings it in 2:2. Kanani, Tagra. A Tagra is a merchant. Okay? That is certainly, though, not the Pshat. The other suggestion that we could really say is that Yitzchak and Yaakov could not marry Canaanites because they were individuals. The sons of Yaakov already were no longer individuals, but were rather a tribe, you know, a large, made up of many tribes. And therefore, there wasn't that same fear that if they married with the local population, that they would be the ones who were influenced, rather they would be the influencers. So therefore, the sons of Yaakov did not have that fear of Canaanites, which raises a different question, which we don't have time to go into now, is whom did the 12 tribes marry? Okay, but there is an opinion here that they did marry Canaanites. Going down to Egypt, correct. The Shaul ben Akhnanit, correct. And there we said it's Dina, there's a whole...
Why is that mentioned?
Right. Okay, but so you understand, but based on this chapter here, we can say that that's exactly what happened, that already that idea of not marrying the Canaanites was for the individual Yitzchak Yaakov, but already Yaakov's sons could. But I think it certainly shows where Yehuda is going in this discussion. So Yehuda has married this woman, and he marries her. Vatahar vateled ben vayikret shmo Er. He has one son named Er. Vatar od vateled ben vatikret shmo Onan. He has a second son named Onan. Vatosef od vateled ben, and again she becomes pregnant, and again has a son. Vatikret shmo Shela vahaya b'chziv bilidita ito. So they have three children, Er, Onan, and Shela. Vayikach Yehuda Isha Le'er Bechoro Ushma Tamar. And Yehuda takes for his son Er a woman whose name is Tamar. And if you look at source number 8, Ushma Tamar, the name Tamar, Shetimra Ma'aseha Kiketoret. Her name is Tamar, representing that she is good and holy like the Ketoret. And then the pasuk continues, Vayhi Er Bechor Yehuda Ra. Beinei Hashem. And obviously you see that the name Er, as soon as you turn the name Er around, the name Er is Ra. Okay, so you have Er is Ra Beinei Hashem. It doesn't tell us what he does, but Vayimitehu Hashem, he dies an unnatural death by God. Vayom Yehuda le'onan. And so then Yehuda says to the next son, Bo el eshet achicha vayabem ota. Marry your brother's wife and do yibum vehakem zera la'achicha, and you will, and your brother will therefore have children. Vayeda Onen kilo lo yehazara. Onen understood that this first, the child would really be like his brother's. Vahaya imba el eshet achiv v'shichet arza lebilti natan zera la'achiv. So therefore, he decides not to impregnate his brother's wife. Vayar beinei Hashem et asher asah. This too is evil in the eyes of God. Vayamat gam oto. And he too is put to death. So what we have here, first of all, is sometimes when we get so caught up in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, we miss this element of the story. Yehuda loses, buries two children. And it's clear that they did not die natural deaths, but rather, God took them from this world. This is a fearsome and terrible punishment. Now, it points out that they too were guilty. We'll talk about that in a moment. But what is this idea of Yehuda losing two sons? Why does Yehuda begin this chapter losing two sons? Now, we know that if you steal something and you want to pay it back, you have to pay back double. You have to pay back double. That's the halacha. What has Yehuda stolen? Yehuda has stolen Yosef. So the payback, the terrible payback, is the death of two sons. And we understand, and perhaps it's with Yehuda bearing his two children, that he begins to understand what Yaakov has been going through. And it gives him some sort of perspective about what the issue is. Now, what is also interesting here is the Yibum practice. The Yibum practice was something that even before Matan Torah seems to be quite prevalent in ancient societies. Okay? And we understand that the whole rationale behind Yibum is really a chesed shel emet. It's a chesed that you're doing for this dead person, because remember, dead, a yibum only occurs to somebody who leaves behind no children, actually no sons, and actually I think it is a no children actually altogether, and it's as if when the closest relative has a child with the widow, it gives some sort of genetic continuity to the dead person, and la halacha, that child is going to inherit the father. When the father dies his fields, it'll go to that child, and that's what Onan says, that it's not going to be his. And as a matter of fact, even la halacha, when there's yibum, there's no marriage ceremony. You don't have to go through kiddushin, because it's as if that brother is just stepping into the place of his dead brother. You're revitalizing a marriage that already exists. It's not a recreating of a new marriage, but is a continuation of what it is. Yes, she could. She could. Yes. Because in ancient times, second wives was certainly. Today it's a whole different story. Okay? So we understand here when Onan refuses to do this, what is he essentially refusing to do? He's refusing to do a chesed. He's refusing to do a chesed for his brother. Okay? Which makes us wonder what kind of relationship these brothers had. Okay? Remember, so we're coming out of a story where one brother is selling another brother. And now we're coming into a story where we don't get a lot of details, but it makes us think about that as well. What kind of relationship do these brothers have when this brother doesn't want to do something for his dead brother? Now, it is important to remember that these sons are also guilty. It's not that they're just being punished for something Yehuda did, and then again, that becomes our parallel worlds here. These sons are guilty. Now, it tells us what Onan's sin is. Onan's sin is he refuses to impregnate Tamar. So, first of all, there's that idea of not doing the Yibum, and then there's this idea of destroying his seed, which is also a sin, and therefore he is killed by God. And what Chazal do is Chazal take from Onan and go backwards. Okay, that if this is the sin that Onan did, and we aren't, and the pasuk doesn't tell us what Er did. Okay, Chazal make a connection between the two, that Er didn't want to impregnate Tamar because she was so beautiful. He didn't want to have to deal with a large pregnant woman, so that he too destroyed his seed. And if you said that his sin perhaps comes out of Ta'ava, Onan's sin would then come out of Kin'ah. Okay, so we have Ta'ava and we have Kin'ah. Now we know the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that tells us there are three things that motzi'in et ha'adam min ha'olam: ha'kinah, ha'ta'avod, ve'ha'kavod. Okay, and so that is going to become the third element in our chapter here. So we have the kin'ah of Onan, we have the ta'ava of Er, and then we have Yehuda in pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayome Yehuda l'Tamar kaloto. Shvi almana beit avicha ad yigdal shela bni ki amar pen yamut gam hu keachiv vatelech tamar vatashev beit avicha. What is Yehuda doing in verse 11? He's telling Tamar to wait until Shela grows up. What is he? Does Yehuda have any intention of giving Tamar to Shela? Probably not. Right. Probably not. Okay, and you can say the pasuk tells us that. He's afraid that if he marries her to Shelah, again Shelah will die. But at the same time, Tamar, because of the concept of Yibum, is not free to marry somebody else. So essentially when Yehuda sends her back to her father, he is sentencing her to a lifetime as a, what we would call today, an aguna. Okay, because he really doesn't intend for, say it again.
He could free her.
He could free her, but that also I think is a more modern. I don't know if they did chalitza then, but if you look at source 2:3, which again is the Rashi in our parak, Rashi here again says, klomar, docha haya ota bakesh. He's pushing her off. Shelo haya b'da'ato lahasi'a lo. Rashi makes that very clear to us that he had no intention to marry her. Why? Ki amar pen yamut muhzeket hizu sheyimituhu ansheha. This woman was married to two men and they already died. There's this concept of an isha katlanit, and Yehuda is not willing to take a risk with that. Now, at this point in time, we ask the question, after Yehuda experiences his own personal tragedy, perhaps we expect him at this point to go back to Yaakov and tell Yaakov the truth.
He has
to okay, but that's right, but he does not. Okay, it's important. But the other question is now, when we talk about, think about this, Yehuda leaves his brothers, he marries, has three sons, the oldest two are old enough to get married. How much time has gone by? Now, if you think about it, from the time Yosef is sold, right, until his father comes down to Egypt, is a period of 22 years. Is 22 years. Is 22 years enough time for Yehuda to get married, have children, have the boys grow up, and then tell you, no, and then tell Tamar to sit and wait until she comes back. Okay? Do you understand this? So the chronology here is problematic. The chronology here is problematic, and there's a tremendous machloket between the various commentators as to what happened first and what the story was, but you understand that there is going to be overlap between the stories in terms of time period, but the way the Torah works is it tells the story of Yehuda and Tamar, the whole story, and then we're going to go back in time to the story of Yehuda. Because the 22 years is the time he sold. Now here, even if the oldest son is old enough to get married, he tells Tamar, go wait until Shelah grows up. So that also gives us more time added here. Okay, so now let's look at the rest of the chapter, and we're going to look at the characters individually. Okay, so until verse 11, how does Yehuda look to us?
Shady.
Shady, yeah. And even more than shady. First of all, remember, he's coming off the sale of Yosef. He's been banished leaves his brothers. He marries a Canaanite. He has sons who are Ra, who God has killed. He has one son who's not willing to help out the other son. Obviously, he must have learned that somewhere. He has no intention of giving Tamar to the third son. Okay? So already by verse 11, we already have a portrait of Yehuda as shady, as the term you used. Okay? And then Pasuk Yudbet starts, Vayirbu Hayamim. Okay? How would you translate Vayirbu Hayamim? Years. Okay? We don't know how much time, but time has gone by. Vatamat Batshua Eshet Yehuda. Vayinachem Yehuda, Vayal El Gozezet, so no, Hu Vechira Re'ehu Hadulami Timnata. Okay, so time goes by, Yehuda's wife dies, he is a widow, his time of mourning is over, and he's going out now to shear his sheep. Vayugad L'tamar Lemar, Hinecha Micha Olet Timnata Lagos, so no. Somehow, we don't know how, Tamar discovers that her father is going from Timnah in order to shear the sheep.
Father-in-law.
Vataser bigdei almunata. She removes her widow's garb. I don't know whether they wear black then as well, but she takes her widow's clothing, me'aleha. Vatechas b'si'if vatit aleif. And she takes a veil and she wraps her face in it. Vateshev bepetach einayim, and she sits at the crossroads, asher al haderech timnata, where he has to pass by in order to get to Timna. Ki ra'ata ki gadal shela vihi lo nitna lo leisha. She understands that at this point, X number of years has gone by, Shela is no longer a child, and it has come time that she should be given to him for a wife. We'll talk about Tamar after we talk about Yehuda. Vayareha Yehuda. Yehuda sees her, thinks she's a prostitute because she covered her face. And he turns to her from the road. And he says, get ready now, I'm going to come to you. He doesn't realize that it is his daughter-in-law. And she says, what are you going to give me? How much are you going to pay? Vayomer anochi eshlach gidi izim min hatzon. He said, I'll send you a kid from the sheep, from the flock. Vatomer imtitein aravon ad shelachecha. She says, fine, but you need to leave me a collateral. Now, why doesn't Yehuda have money with him? Because he's just going to share the sheep. Great, right. That indicates that this was not something that he had planned. It's something that happens to him on the way, and he finds himself without money, and he says, I'll pay your salary with the kid, but I don't have it with me. So she's not a fool. She says, leave me collateral. Vayomer, he says, Maha eravon asher etein lach, what collateral do you want? Vatomer chotmecha, pitilecha, umatecha, asher biadecha. I want your signet ring. You know, that's what they used to have to put into the wax in order to leave behind an identity. It is. It's a very serious price. Okay? Yeah, your passport, right? Okay? He gives her, he asks for the signet ring. Pitilecha is his cloak. umatecha, and your staff, which is in your hand. Vayitein la, and he. It is a lot of things. Vayitein la. That's it. He says vayitein la. Vayavo eleha vataherlo. Okay, and she becomes pregnant from this union. Vatakam vatelech vatasar siifa, and so that she goes and she takes off the veil. Me'alav vatilbash bigde alumanata. She goes back to her father's house and she puts back on her black widowed clothing. That they're being done. Vayishlach Yudat gedihizim. So then, Yudah, a man of his word, is sending the kid. He sends it with his friend to get back his identifying factors. But he can't find her. So he asks the people, Lemar, where was the prostitute? He who was at the crossroads? And the people of the town said, prostitute? We don't have any prostitutes in this town. We don't know. I don't know who it is. Vayeshev el Yudah. So the friend comes back to Yudah. Vayomer lo matzitiha. He says, I can't find her. Vagaman shema komamu lo haita bazekadesha. And not only can't find her, but I asked around. And nobody seems to know who it is. Vayomer Yudah. So Yudah says, tikach la pen hi elavuz. He says, you better hold on it, because I don't want anybody to say that, you know, I didn't pay. It should be a sign that I sent the payment and we just couldn't find her. 3 months go by. And her pregnancy becomes apparent, and Yehuda gets word that Tamar has committed adultery because she is spoken for to Shela. And therefore, if she becomes pregnant with somebody else, it is as she is committed adultery. Yehuda's initial reaction is burn her. Okay, now we'll come back to it. V'himotzeit v'hishalchat chameh leimor, and they're taking her out to kill her, and she sends to her father-in-law saying, "Le'isha sher elulo onochi hara, the man who owns these things, he's the one who impregnated me." Vatomer hakerna lemiha chotemet apetilim v'hamateh hazeh. She says, "You recognize to whom this belongs." Vayaker Yehuda, and Yehuda recognizes the signs. Vayomer, and he says, "Sadka mimeni ki alken lo netatiha l'sheila b'ni v'lo Yosef od l'data." And he says that she is right because I didn't give her Shela. And we'll come back to what the rest of the pasuk means. And behold, she is, when she gives birth, she's actually having twins. And it was when she's giving birth. Yad, one baby stuck its hand through the birth canal. And the midwife puts a red string around the hand. This is the first baby. But the baby pulls back his hand. But the second child came out before the hand child. He said, what strength did you have in order to come out before your brother? And they named the child Petz. And then the second, whatever you want to call him, child came out. Asher al yado hasheni, the one with the red thread. And his name became known as Zorach. Okay, so now let's continue. We already started listing the shady behavior of Yehuda. How does that shady behavior continue here most prominently? In his, before the reaction even, in his going to a prostitute. Okay, now on one hand we know the pasuk clearly told us that his wife is dead. So he's not cheating on his wife. Okay, now you also know, and we mentioned this last time, that the Rambam, and did I bring it for you? Yes. The Rambam in source number 5 tells us, Kodem matan Torah, haya adam poker isha bashuk, im ratza v'hu v'hi noten laschara. Before matan Torah, there was an acceptable type of union, and that was if a man met a woman in the anywhere, and what we would call today was consensual, noten laschara, he would pay her, bo el ota, he would have sex with her, im ala derfo lechlo, and each one would continue on its way. V'zu hi nikret kadesha. And the Torah uses that phrase, prostitute, that's what it means. Mishenitna haTorah, but from when Torah was given, ne'esra haKadesha, as it says in the pasuk, lo tia kadesha mibnot Yisrael. Lefichach, kol haboel isha l'shem zunut b'lo kiddushin, whoever has what we would call today, I guess, a one-night stand, lo kem min haTorah mepnei sheba'al kadesha. So in other words, according to the black and white halacha here, has Yehuda broken a halacha?
No.
No, he hasn't. But yet, how do we feel about this? I'm not going there, okay? No, but let's just talk about Yehuda.
Okay.
Let's talk about Yehuda. Even though we say that halachically, technically, he's right, how does that make us feel about Yehuda when we read this chapter?
Not the most wrong one.
That's right. That we expect, we're talking about Bnei Yaakov, that's right, and we expect a certain standard, perhaps, that just because it's okay according to halacha, that does not necessarily make it
okay.
Okay, so we are uncomfortable with him going to this prostitute. Now, we said by the fact that he doesn't have money indicates to us that this wasn't necessarily planned. But even so, what happens? Let's go back to that pasuk. Okay, that pasuk is pasuk tedvav and tedzayin. He sees her, vayet eileha el haderech. So here we have some very, very interesting Torah Sheba al peh. First, let's begin at source number 3. Source number 3 is the Bereishit Rabbah says, Bikesh la'avor, he intended to walk on his way. V'zimin lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu malach shehu mimuneh al hata'ava. You know, each angel has its own job. So there is an angel whose job is in terms of desire, and God sent this malach. Amar lo Yehuda, hechan ata holech. This malach said, Yehuda, where are you going? Mehechan malachim omdim. Where are we going to get kings from? Mehechan gedolim omdim. Vayet alaha al haderach ba'al korcho shelo bitovato. Okay? Against his will and certainly not in his best interest. And we have a whole bunch of different sources that say this as well. I'm going to skip them now, but you'll see them as we go along. Okay, so you see here that the idea here... Now, does that mean that Yehuda does not have Bechira Chofshit? Does this mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu, because we said, remember that we have these parallel words, does this mean that the Malach is sending him and Baal Korcho Vayet? Does that mean that God is... He clearly still has. He clearly still has Bechira Chofshit. But as if, like, perhaps he would not have noticed her, the malach makes sure that he takes notice. Okay? And now, he takes notice without, what is his intention here?
Simple, right.
Simple here, there doesn't seem to be any ulterior motives, okay? What, now, just let's try to, like, understand the psychology behind Yehuda. What would bring Yehuda, as we said, we expect more from him, to meet up with a prostitute on the street?
He's not the Yehuda before.
This is the Yehuda before, and we understand that this is somebody who's undergone a trauma, okay? He's probably... He probably has a very low self-esteem at this point in time. Okay, he probably feels rejected by his family. He's buried two sons and a wife. Okay, we need to remember that. We probably understand, and I think that this act perhaps indicates to us, which is also something that we almost have to feel bad for Yehuda at this position, because that is what's allowing him to be involved in what we would describe as harmful behavior. Okay, so that's Yehuda, and I think we understand Yehuda. Let's try to understand now Tamar. Okay, how do we understand Tamar? She too, remember, has buried
two husbands.
We need to remember that, and has been sitting in her hiding for the third, and I think she probably is smart enough to know that, you know, he's not going to marry him so fast. So we understand, so you sort of say she's sort of in a point of desperation, perhaps. perhaps the point of, well, I have a situation here and I need to do something about it. So what was plan A? What was her plan? Let's look at the verse carefully. Right? She hears that Yehuda is coming up from Timnah. And what does she do in verse 14? She takes off her mourning clothing. Why would she do that?
Because she doesn't want to be recognized.
Is that it? Is she coming out to begin? That's the question here. Is she coming out to begin with a plan where she is going to trick Yehuda into sleeping with her because he thinks she's a prostitute? Like, is that the impression you get that was her plan?
She wants
Yehuda
to sleep with her.
Does she want? No, I don't think so. Ki rata ki gadal sheila v'hila loli isha.
And she goes to the place where he's going to share the sheep.
And what does she initially plan to do?
Maybe she's going to confront him.
Yes. I think that according to Pshat, her first...
Why would she not confront him in a widow girl?
I've already finished with my widow and I'm ready to get...
It's a way of saying...
But she's also dressing like a prostitute. So she's...
Hold on a second. Let's get this. You say that she's dressing like a prostitute. I don't think she's wearing fishnet pantyhose.
But
they didn't
mention it separately. Otherwise, they could have just said she put on the prostitute's clothes.
Right. So what is it says? Vatachez b'tzeif vatit aleif. She covers her face. And then look at this also. Pasuk tedvav vayara Yehuda vayachshavah lezona. Ki kisita paneha. Right? The Pasuk says that's why Yehuda thought she was a prostitute. Maybe that's the way prostitutes dressed in those days. But let's look at some of the interesting commentators that we have here. Let's look at number 8. We did 8 already. Let's look at 9. Rashi. Vatita lech. He says, kisita paneha shelo yakirba. Just like you said, that she covers her face so she shouldn't recognize her. Now, Vateshev Petach Einayim. She sits at a place called Petach Einayim. Bipetichat Einayim, Pashat Drachim Sha'al Derech Timnata. The Pshat is that the Petach Einayim means crossroads. V'rabotenu Dershu, but our Rabotenu tell us, Pitcho Shel Avram Avinu, Shekol Einayim Mitzapot Lir Oto. That this crossroad was Dafka, the crossroad that also goes up to Hebron, where Avram Avinu is there, and it's called Petach Einayim, because Kol Einayim Mistaklot, look towards Avram. Ki Ra'ata Ki Gadal Shela, Lefichach Hefkira Atzma Etzel Yehuda, Shaita Mitavela Mid Mimena Banim. Which is exactly as you are saying, that her intention here was, according to Rashi, to go out and seduce Yehuda. Yehuda wasn't doing his plan. He tricked her by not giving her Shela, so she is going to trick him. Goes around, comes around. That's Rashi. Vayachshaver Lezona, Lefisha Yoshevet Biparashat Tadrachim, Kisa Kitzitat Pina. Now listen to the Midrash. Umedrash Rabotenu. I'm in 9, in the middle of the paragraph, by the bold words. Ki kisetapane kishaita bebeit chameha haitat snu'a. When he took her to marry his sons and he lived in her house, her face was always covered. Lefichach lo chashda. He shalcha el chameha lo retzta lahalbin panav lomar mimcha anim uberet ela leish asher elu lo amra im yored me'atzmo yodeh ba'atzmo yodeh im lav yisrafuni aval albin velo albin panav mikana munoch ladam sheyipluhu lekivshan ha'esh velo yalbin panecha v'robu rabim. Rashi tells us some very interesting things here. Rashi says the reason he doesn't recognize her, it says in the pasuk, because she covered her face. Not now, but he covered her face then when she was his daughter-in-law and he had never seen her. So he, even if he meets her on this time, he doesn't recognize her. Then Rashi continues that she's sitting at the Petach Einayim. We're going to have to say, what does Avraham Avinu have to do with this? We'll come back to it in a minute. The other thing it explains to us, why doesn't she say to him to begin with, These are you. You're the one who impregnated me. Why does she leave it up to him in order to for him to admit? Okay, so again, we're seeing another midah here of Tamar. We compared her to Keteret before. We say she always covered her face, Haita tznu'a bebeit chameha, in her father-in-law's house. And now we see that she wasn't willing to embarrass somebody, that she's willing to die rather than embarrass somebody. Let's see the Rashi because we're in it, and then we'll go back to other Mefarshim. The Pasuk, let's go back to that Pasuk where it says that he married her, Pasuk Chavav. Pasuk Chavav, Yehuda admits that the signs are his. V'lo yasaf od l'da'ata. And here the English translation is he does not continue to be intimate with her. Rashi brings two deot. Yeshomim lo hosif. That he never had relations with her again. That she became pregnant from this one time. V'yeshomim lo pasak. Lo yasif doesn't mean he never had, but it means he didn't stop. Okay, and you have that as well. We have the same machloket with Eldad and Medad, which says the term v'lo yachsofu. There some say that he never did again, and they never stopped. Okay, so our
question.
Yes, that he stayed married to her, that she stayed married to Yehuda. So those are two different opinions, and we don't have an answer for it. Now let's look at the Sfarno. The Sfarno here gives us a different explanation to our whole story. The Sfarno says in source number 11, Ki ra'ata ki gadal shela, v'chashva shekashir yer'ene Yehuda bizulat bigdei alumanata. She figured when Yehuda sees her on the road without her mourning clothes, Yish'al, then he will initiate and he will say, Madua kacha asata, why did you take off your mourning clothing? Vatishavehu kiva moed lahasiram. And then she'll say to him, because it's time for me to stop being a widow. Shaharei amarla shivi almana adjidal shela. Because he had told her to stay until shela got bigger. Vihine az kvar gadal shela. Continue. Ki lo yada ki kalatahi gam acheshenat ahela eladerach lo hikira. Sheim haya makira haya medaberba b'shvil b'no. Sfarno says that even had he recognized, has he known it was her, he would have spoken to her. Ule'el yitbarach mitknu alilot. But God sometimes has other plans. Sheratza sheyez zar'am Yehuda shehaya yoter shalem v'ratzoi mishela. Remember we started class a while ago saying that God had his plans. What was God's plans? To plant the beginning of Mashiach. God wants Mashiach to come from Tamar, but rather than come from Shela, who comes from a Canaanite woman, it's preferable to have the genes from Yehuda. Mimena yihye Mashiach tzidkenu. Ma titeinli, listen to this, hetchila lidaber kedei sheyakira. She originally took off the clothing, she figured she didn't have to talk to him, she was so tzanua. But as soon as he doesn't recognize her, she begins to talk with him. Why? Ki lo haita mikavenet lishum etnan belisa fake. She had no intention, as Rashi said, to seduce Yehuda. By talking to Yehuda, she assumed that if he didn't recognize her face, also remember many years have gone by, but at least he would recognize her voice. When he doesn't recognize her face, and he doesn't recognize her voice, all of a sudden she says to herself, wait a minute, plan A isn't working, but I can be flexible enough here to go with the plan B. Aval hayta kavanata lakim zerem Yehuda, uvechen lakcha eravon, lo lahanot bo, ela le'edut. She specifically asked for this high price of those things because she knew she was going to need it as a dot. Vim haya natein la etnan lo hayta mikabelet ki lo hayta oz ima edut lezakot et nafsha. That was the only thing she would have in order to defend herself. Okay, so this gives us a different perspective on the story. Rashi said play was just to seduce Yehuda to begin with. But Sfarno said that, no, that was actually plan B. Plan A was to discuss this as adults. But when he doesn't take advantage of that, she realizes that she has to go to plan B.
But if she really just wanted to talk to him, so why didn't she just go to his house? I mean, why is she going and sitting by the road?
Okay. That's right.
He sent her away.
He had sent her away. They don't live near each other. Her father really should have probably gone out to. It is. But now look at source number 12. Source number 12 is the Bereshit Baba, going back to that Petach Einayim. Source number 12 tells us, Chazarnu al kol ha-mikra, v'lo matzanu makom sheshmo Petach Einayim. This term, Petach Einayim, doesn't appear anyplace else, and there is no biblical place called Petach Einayim. Umahu Petach Einayim, so why is the crossroads called Petach Einayim? Ela melame sheteltta eineha v'petach shekol einayim tuluyot ba, ve'amra yihi ratzon lefanecha Hashem Elokai, shelo etzei min habayit hazeh reikanit. That she turned her eyes, not as Rashi said to Avram Avinu, but here, according to the Midrash, she's turning her eyes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And she's coming here with her intention. Her intention is completely pure, and her intention here is that she wants to lahakim et habayit hazeh mi Yehuda. And she doesn't necessarily care if it's from Yehuda, or she doesn't care if it's from Sheila, but she realizes that there is something here that she wants to be part of. And to look at something even more interesting, if we go down to source number 14. Source number 14 is the Rashi in the next perek. The next perek, Perek Lamed Tet, starts with the story of Eshet Potiphar. And Rashi there says something fascinating. He says, Kedei l'smoch ma'aseh ishto shel Potiphar l'ma'aseh Tamar. And we'll talk about this more in a few minutes, the parallel between the two stories. But Rashi tells us you should just know that Mrs. Potiphar and Tamar have something in common. Lomar lach mazu l'shem shamayim af zu l'shem shamayim. Both of their motivations were coming from positive places. Shera'ata be'itztar login shela shatida lamid banim mimenu. Mrs. Potiphar apparently saw in the stars that she was going to have children with Yosef, ve'ena yodat imimena o im bita. Okay, that's a whole different story, Mrs. Potiphar, but what that says to us is that's saying to us that Tamar, clearly, whatever you're thinking about, you read the chapter, Rashi, Sfarno, the Mefarshim are telling us very clearly that her intentions here were positive, were pure. And just to prove it, if you look at source number 15, when we go to the book of Rut, and we're already in the fourth chapter where Boaz has already married Ruth. Vayomer kol ha'am asher b'shar v'zakenim edim yitein Hashem et isha haba el beitecha kerachel ukelea. Right? Ruth is being compared to Rachel and Leah. Asher banu shtehem et beit Yisrael v'asachayel b'efrata v'kara shem beit lechem. And you know, Rachel and Leah are the ones who established Am Yisrael. V'hi beitcha k'beit peretz asher yalda Tamar liYehuda. Okay, and your house, they're blessing her that your house should be like the house of Tamar. If Tamar was a prostitute, you would not want to say to somebody, oh, you should be like her. So the fact that Tamar, even at the time already of Ruth, is being looked upon in this way, we understand that that is indeed the way Chazal has come to look at Tamar. And taking this even a step further, if you look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, when Yehuda's friend asks, where is the Kadesha? And they say, what do they answer? Lo haita bazeh Kadesha. That they're prophesizing without knowing that they're prophesizing, and there's even a midrash that there's a bat kol, a heavenly voice that comes out and says, there is no prostitution happening here. Okay, so we sort of understand Yehuda, we understand perhaps even Tamar, but now we have to ask ourselves this question. We understand that, as we said, that God has his plans. Why did the Melech HaMashiach, why did this story have to come out? That's right, it would have been much easier for Tamar's father to go to Yehuda and say, marry Shelah, and we would not have had this whole story. What is the rationale behind this story? So Rashi sees this story very much as a cause and effect. When we saw that very first Rashi, that Vayered Me'achav, and you have this, let's go back to source number 2, verse source 1, Why is the story of Yosef compared to the story of Yehuda? That the brothers, remember we said who did it? That the brothers forcibly removed him from his place of respect. Kisharu b'tzarat avihen, when they saw their father suffering. Amru, ata amartel mechro, you were the one who told us to sell him. Ilu amartel lahashivo, hayinu shoim lacha. Had you told us to send him home, we would have listened to you. So according to Rashi, the troubles that Yehuda is experiencing here in chapter 38 are a direct result of what he did in chapter 37 when he did not take the responsibility, he did not fulfill the role he was supposed to. Yes, perhaps he did succeed in saving Yosef from death, but he could have prevented the whole sale for himself, and his father has all those years of anguish had he acted differently. And taking this idea even a step further, if you look at source number 19, in source number 19, you will notice that there's actually a very strong parallel between our two chapters. Right? Vayikru et ketonet Yosef, vayishchatu se'ir izim. They specifically dipped the coat in the blood of a kid. Here, what does he send to? He sends the whole business. She asks, he's going to send her a kid. Okay, Yaakov was tricked with a kid, and here too, Yehuda is tricked with this kid. Vayishalchu et ketonet hapasim. The brothers send the coat, and they say to him, Hakerna, recognize. Look what she does in pasuk chafhei. V'hi motzat, they're taking her out. V'hi shalcha, same term, el chameha, and she says to him, hakerna. Exact same term. Recognize. You say, that's why she has those ideas. Recognize this idea. Send, okay? And then it says there, vayakireha, right? He recognizes the coat, Yaakov. Last one in source 13, Vayomer ketonet bini, and he makes that assumption. Here too we have Vayaker Yehuda. Okay? So we say not only is it a cause and effect, but in reality it is also a very good example of Midah kenegen Midah. Yehuda leaves Tamar husbandless, he becomes wifeless. He takes a son from Yaakov, he loses his son. But now, in a way, we also have something repeated. Yehuda essentially judges Yosef as guilty. He became the judge and the jury. He condemns him to a life as slave, etc. What is indeed happening again in our chapter? Same thing. Do you see that? Again, Yehuda is the judge and jury, and he condemns an innocent person, again, not only not the life of slavery this time, but to death. So in essence, also you have the same idea happening in both of these stories. But here there's a happier ending, which we'll come to in a minute. Besides the parallel backwards from Yehuda to the sale of Yosef, there's also a parallel forward. If you parallel the story of Yehuda in this chapter to Yosef in the next chapter. So both of them are being brought down. Both of them find themselves in a situation where there is sexual misconduct, right? We're talking specifically about the story of Potiphar. But what is the major difference between the stories? Yehuda sins and Yosef does not. Okay, Yosef leaves a coat in Mrs. Potiphar's hands, and she uses that as a sign to prove his guilt. Yehuda leaves signs with Tamar. And both of those, again, both of those things are used to identify. Both stories also, nobody asks Yosef for his version. He too is judged and sentenced immediately. And as we pointed out before, the Rashi who says that Mrs. Potiphar and Tamar have the idea of shame, idea of sinning l'shem shamayim. Now, if we look, Rashi. I don't know what motivates Rashi to say that. Okay, it is. When you think about it, a little strange. But anyway, as our story, though, back to our chapter here, as our story unfolds here, we said Yehuda begins our chapter very shady, okay? But he actually redeems himself. In what way does Yehuda redeem himself? Yehuda redeems himself in verse 26. He redeems himself when he says, Tzadka mimeni. Now, first of all, if you look in source six, Lama Natan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Keter Yehuda. Why does Yehuda deserve to become king? Hello, lo levado haya gibor mikol achav. He's not the strongest of the brothers. Hello, Shimon v'Levi giborim. Shimon and Levi are strong. V'acherim, and other brothers had qualities. La, shedan din emet l'tamar. It's because he actually came forth and admitted the truth l'tamar. V'chein aset dayan ha'olam. And this is, let's skip down to the bottom. What does it mean? Haya Yitzchak v'Yakov yoshvim sham. V'chal achav hayu mechapin oto. Rashi, the Midrash is telling us this wasn't just Yehuda condemning her to death. There actually was a court. And who were the head judges? Yitzchak, Yaakov, and the 10 brothers. Hekir Yehuda l'makom v'ma amitat davar. Remember that he could have easily denied that he was the father. For him to come forward and admit his mistake, he is admitting before his father and his grandfather and his brothers, and he is essentially turning himself into a laughing stock. Okay? But he doesn't do this time. V'chachaya ben Zoma Omer Doresh Nitbayashta Bolam Hazeh. Yes, you became embarrassed in this world, but you will not become embarrassed in the next world. And this comes back to, remember I told you, we had kina, tava, and kavod. So we saw the kina, we saw the tavod. Kavod would have kept Yehuda from saying, don't know, not my problem. Okay, but he is one who, and it is because of that idea that he does not allow a second time an innocent victim to be harmed by his decision, and he faces up to his own failure, and he is able to say that she is more righteous than I, and that is why he is able to become a gadlut. He becomes the king as a result of this. And this is something we say about our leaders. We don't say that leaders don't make mistakes, because everybody makes mistakes. The question is, how do we deal with that mistake? So that's exactly what you see happening, and that's why this has become such a pivotal chapter. Not only because of the Midah Keneged Midah, not only comparison, but with Yosef, but you see Yehuda makes a transition in this chapter, and he finds himself in this. What is tshuva? Being in the same situation and not repeating it. So here he is in the same position, condemning an innocent person, but this time he steps up and he says, Tzadka mimeni, which you have in source 2, number 4. Again, Rashi, on our chapter, Tzadka bidibureha, she is correct in her speech, mimeni hi meuberet, she is pregnant through me. Okay, now remember, just to make it even a point stronger, he sends the animal with the friend, and he tells the animal to keep the, tells the friend to keep the animal. Why does the friend have to keep the animal? So people shouldn't say, which indicates to us that Yehuda was sensitive to what the people are saying, which makes it even stronger that he is willing to publicly come out and admit that he is the guilty one, not her.
But also that he publicly
right. Right. But if it's okay, I can't find her. That's why I keep the money myself. But he doesn't, and he specifically says Pen Yomru. Okay, which indicates, I said to us, that he has that. Now, when she specifically asks for those three things, she specifically asks for the signet ring, which is a sign of Malchut. She asks for the petil, which is his coat, which is a sign of Sanhedrin. And the mateh, the stick, is a sign of Melech HaMashiach. So it's a maseh avot siman labanim in a very strong way. And you will also notice, by the way, that at the end of the chapter, he has two sons. Okay, why does he have two sons? He has twins, but why twins? Why specifically twins? Right. The twins, once he has undergone that tshuva process, he then has the tshuva, he then gets paid back for the idea. Now, we had spoken about, and I told you we're in a process here, we had spoken about this as part of a process to Melech HaMashiach. 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, we spoke about the story of Benot Lot. What are the similarities between that story and this story? Okay, so you understand what I'm saying, but let's talk about the similarities, though. That's what I'm interested in here.
So it's someone who's being, the daughter's tricked the
okay.
father.
Okay, so in both stories you have trickery, right? In both stories you have trickery, the daughter's tricked the father, Tamar tricks Yehudah. Fine, what else? Okay, in both our stories we have the birth of two sons. Correct, both our stories we have two sons being born. Right, we don't know what happened, but we do. She does name the child Me'av, which indicates that everybody.
Well,
knows.
It's gotta. I mean, they're the only three people. That are
right, so there's
not
gotta be.
The cave, but afterwards, no, that's what I was about to say. That the daughters of Lot actually had a very positive reason.
Okay, right. So that goes correct. So that is in. So let's get this organized. So first of all, in both our stories have two dead men. I remember the daughters of Lot had fiancés who get left behind. We spoke about that. And here there are two dead sons of Yehudah. In both our stories, it is the women who are the brains behind the plan. They are the initiators. They are the ones who take the plan further. They are the problem solvers. There is trickery in both stories. In both stories, we have the story begins because a man has left the place where he was originally. Lot leaves Sodom and then Seorah and ends up in the... Right, he goes down. Here too, Yehudah goes down. Both our women have good intentions. Both our stories, the women are foreign. Okay, we're not talking about Jewish women. There's also the quasi-incest here. There is an incest element in both stories. We'll get to that in a moment. We can talk about that in a moment. And obviously, and I think, and this is something I did mention by the root story that some of you were not so excited about, but you might want to look at the Benot Lot story, when you look at it in connection with the Yehudah story, that the root behind everybody's action here might actually be Yibum. That the daughters there also were trying to continue the family with the closest living relative they have. Here too, this is a Yibum story, because before the Torah, now Yibum is only with a brother, but before biblical times, Yibum could actually be with any living relative. Okay?
The root is Keilu from Moab.
We're going to talk about root next week. Okay, because that is the obvious step. As you point out, we now have two branches of Mashiach, and you see the stories there are extremely similar. And the last thing I would like to actually end with is source number 20. source number 20 is Hagon Mibreshev. The Gaon Mibreshev is really asking bottom line. You know, everything that's written in the Torah is written there for us to learn from, for us to have some sort of effect today. And he says like this, Hine kol hatnuot v'ha'hit orot sheba'olam kol shekein haklaliot u'b'chol ofen u'b'chol tseva sheyet lo davar reik hema. He says every movement, every philosophy in the world was put in this world for a purpose. None of them are rake. None of them have no value. Navon yavin davar liishuro ad hechen hadavarim menan la'an. And he who is really intelligent will be able to understand how, what kind of ramifications all kinds of these philosophies have. Ve'et asher techezene einenu b'dor hazeh ki gadla teshukat rambim mibnei amenu l'shivat tzion. He says, and look, those of you who are living now, now he lived right after after World War II. He says, we're living in a time period where there is such a desire of so many people to return to Tzion. Hein amnam ki rabim hema ubavotenu harabim ha'olchim bazaderach akalaton v'lo ba'ah chelek Yaakov. But many of these people who are initiating the return to the land of Tzion are not exactly God-fearing Jews. Okay? And you can think about the early Zionists and, you know, of course, the story with the Peis and the Temanim, all their stories. Mikol makom, but even so, zot omer shezman ha-geula mimashesh uba. He says, the redemption is coming. It's on its way. You can feel it. Shahamishchiyut b'Yisrael kvar gadla komata. The messianism is rising up. In lo bischutenu, even not because we are worthy of it, as mikorach tzaratenu, because of the suffering that we've experienced. Ki gadol ke'ev hagalut me'rov itim. The suffering of exile has been so great. V'yamim lachein, and therefore has come the point, v'taser b'day alumanata. We, the Jewish people, are removing our garments of widowhood, ukvar kashel koach hasevel, and from the depth of our suffering, as we said about Tamar, of her depth of her frustration, ole hagalut hachel hazeh ki ra'ata ki gadol sheila. She sees that sheila has become older, and you know the bracha, when Yaakov is blessing the children, he blesses Yehuda. And he says, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda ad ki yavo sheila. Okay, until Mashiach comes. Ze Mashiach shene'emar ad bo ad yavo shilo. What the Gaon Mibreshev is saying about our story is that Tamar, who's compared, do you remember it's compared to Ketoret? Tamar actually becomes a foreshadower for Am Yisrael. And perhaps her actions are questionable. Perhaps she should not have made herself out to be a prostitute. And perhaps when we came and we established Am Eretz Yisrael after the war, perhaps though our first leaders were not exactly the most God-fearing people. But sometimes there comes a point in your life where you have to do what you have to do. And he says that that story of Tamar, which brought about the birth of Melech HaMashiach, is that is what we are experiencing now in Eretz Yisrael, the return, and that you shouldn't look at the Zionists as negative personalities, but you should look at them as also being part of God's major plan of those two plans, those two worlds. People are doing their own thing. They don't even realize that they are in actuality playing forth God's plan. And that became, and that was the issue that we started with, is that we sometimes have to learn to change our perceptions. And that, yes, perhaps Israel came about through questionable methods, but the outcome is